Hello and welcome. This is Your Call. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and today we're covering one of my favorite topics, books. The holidays are certainly quickly approaching, and we're going to get ready to head to your independent bookstore with lots of gift ideas for your friends and family, whether you like fiction or nonfiction, the classics, or maybe you have in mind some good kids' books. We're going to have some suggestions for you today. So, we want to invite you to call, too. What have been your favorite reads this year, and what books are you gushing about with your friends? We intend to open up the lines and hear your recommendations, and we'll post them later today on yourcallradio.org. But first, I'm joined by two experts who are going to share their don't-miss picks for 2017. Joining me in studio are two guests. Pete Mulvihill, he's a regular around this time of the year. Green Apple Books, an independent bookstore selling new and used books on Clement Street in San Francisco. They've been there for 50 years. The store is an official San Francisco legacy business, and there's a second store in the Inner Sunset as well. Pete is also helping to run the San Francisco Local First organization, and he's on the board of the American Booksellers Association. Welcome back, Pete.
Thanks, Renee. Great to be here.
And we're really fortunate to have an actual author in the house. It's nice to hear from the folks who actually write the books we love. Her first novel is The Incendiaries, and her name is Aro Kwan. That book is coming out in July, published by Riverhead Books. Aro Kwan is a National Endowment for the Arts Literature Fellow, and her writing has appeared in The Guardian, on Vice, Time, Electric Literature, in Playboy, the San Francisco Chronicle, and elsewhere as well. Welcome, Aro Kwan.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Yes, indeedy. And this is one of those shows where the listeners always have their own suggestions. So what recommendations do you have? What questions do you have for our guests? Do you work in a bookstore or a library? And what recommendations do you have? The number is 866-798-8255, or drop us an email at yourcall@kalw.org. Before we jump in with those recommendations, let's get to know a little bit about the two of you and your love for books. So, Pete, we'll start with you. You're co-owner of Green Apple Books. How did that come to pass?
Well, I actually stumbled into it. I moved here in the early 90s, straight out of college, and thought I was going to be a journalist. I was completely underqualified, and there were no jobs. So I took a temp assignment working at the bookstore. So I was helping out the bookkeeper for a couple weeks. And over the years, I took on more and more responsibility, and gradually the original owner of the store wanted to retire. So he reached out to me and a couple other employees, and we worked out sort of an owner-financed buyout. I went to grad school in the meanwhile, thought I was going to get out and do some teaching or some writing myself, but now it's been 24 years at the bookstore, and I've got two great partners and a wonderful staff that help keep things moving.
And over the years, I imagine the whole idea of readership has changed. What have you noticed?
Well, that's a two-hour show right there.
Yeah.
And I've been telling my wife for 20 years now that the sky's falling, because at first it was the Crown Books and the discounters, and then it was Borders and Barnes & Noble, and then it was Amazon, and then it was the Kindle. And somehow or another, thanks to San Franciscans choosing print books and locally owned independent bookstores, we're still there. There's no magic that we've done to keep the store alive. It's really consumers vote with their wallets on what they want the retail world to look like, and enough people walk in our store and buy something every day. So, you know, there have been movements. Our cookbook section used to be tiny. Now it's huge. Mm. Our kids' books and middle grade and young adult section was much smaller when I started there. The Harry Potter revolution just opened up worlds of books. And for us, you know, that's great because it hooks a whole new generation on reading. We see trends come and go. We expanded our LPs back in the 90s and then shrank them when CDs came, and now we're back to LPs again. So some of it's LPs are back.
Is that right?
We do a great business in vinyl records. Yeah.
All right, R.O., you're a writer and also a reviewer of books. So have you always been an avid reader?
Oh, yes. That was my only favorite thing to do for most of my childhood. And it's part of all that's keeping me sane, I think, especially this past year.
I'll tell you what, anybody who's ever read a book and loved a book kind of in their secret life said, I could do this, I could write, I could be an author. So, but most of us, of course, couldn't. We just don't have it. So what turned you from an avid reader to an actual author?
That's a really good question. I think, if anything, for me, I don't think I always knew I wanted to write, but I remember a few times in school, I did get chances to write fiction, and this is part of why I believe, I'm sure most people do who are listening, that arts education is so important. And when I got to write a little fiction, and when I got to see what it could do, I felt about as powerful as an 8-year-old can feel, as a 15-year-old can feel, as a 13-year-old can feel. The magic of that was something that stayed with me, and that was the start, I think.
So getting kids to read early can turn them from readers into writers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your book is coming out in July. It's called The Incendiaries.
Tell
us about it.
It's about a Korean-American woman who gets involved with a group of fundamentalist Christians. It turns out to be a cult with ties to North Korea. Things go from bad to worse, and they end up bombing abortion clinics. And it's narrated by the woman who falls into the cult, the cult leader, and a man who loves the woman and is entirely opposed to the cult and everything they stand for.
Wow. Wow. How current, how, I don't know, that
incendiary.
Just sounds remarkable. Yeah, incendiary. Remarkable. All right, looking forward to that coming out in July.
Thank you.
Pete, last time you were on, you had some summer reading recommendations, so let's get right into it. What do you have for us today?
Well, it depends on where you want to start. I have little lists for cookbooks or photo books or
let's
politics.
How about nonfiction?
Nonfiction. All right. On the political realm, if people want to stay engaged, Ta-Nehisi Coates has a new book out, a collection of essays called We Were 8 Years in Power. He's wonderful. There's a brand new straight into paperback book called Collusion that's looking at the Russia-Trump ties. I heard you mention Hillbilly Elegy earlier, which is still selling. People are still trying to figure out what the hell happened about a year ago. White Rage is another book that kind of looks at how we got here. So there's a lot of good political books on our shelves right now.
I imagine people are just trying to figure it out. And I think Hillbilly Elegy is one that Kevin, our engineer, mentioned. And I've been meaning to pick that one up, too. It just seems like because he came from, West Virginia, Kentucky, one of the southern states.
Kentucky and Ohio,
state.
Yeah.
Yeah, coal state. But he was trained at an Ivy League school. So he's got a foot down in both worlds. And it might be just the perspective you need, as you said, to try to figure out what happened.
Yeah, it's pretty illuminating. Ultimately, for me, it was a little unsatisfying because I wanted what to do next, and that wasn't written in the book. But it is illuminating.
Are there any out there that have the what's next question answered?
No, not that I've seen yet. Maybe they're in production. Maybe they're en route. For that, I feel like magazines and newspapers are doing the best job of that right now. And then the books will come. But books are, usually a slower process for nonfiction and trail the news a little bit. So there's incredible journalism going on right now that I think has a lot of the answers for what's next. And, there's all kinds of movements happening. And the social media, of course, is, helping organize the resistance and the next elections. Really, that's what determines who's in power, right? So,
yeah. Well, we're talking what's next, but I'm wondering, did Hillary Clinton's book "What Happened" fly off the shelves or not?
We sold a good number of copies. I think people feel mixed about her, whose fault it was. There was all that infighting for a little while with Donna Brazile and. It's a political, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it except, we sold some copies. She got to tell her story. I'm not sure what's next. There's some speculation that there's an Arkansas seat in the Senate coming available soon, and there might be some Clintons that could run for that one.
Did it sell better or worse than you expected? Did you overstock?
The same. Yeah. It's hard. You just can't tell if people are going to want to read that or if they're fed up with it and want to move on to the next thing. Mm. People in the Bay Area have, generally a great love for her and everything she accomplished. So there were definitely some good readers for that one.
And you weren't left like 50 copies on the shelf unbought?
Nah.
Okay,
no.
Cool. All right. Aro Kwan, tell us about your picks for nonfiction.
For nonfiction, let's see. I mean, some of what some of what you were saying was art. That's definitely, those are books that I've loved too. But there's one in particular though, called, and this is going to diverge a little bit, but there's a collection that was put out by Teju Cold called Blind Spot. And there, it's a collection of photographs and writing, photographs with text that accompanies the photographs. And it's just one of the most beautiful and empathetic books I've read in a long time. And everything Teju Cole writes, if people have read his photo criticism in the New York Times, there's so much compassion in his eye that I think that it's something that we all need, and it's such a pleasure to get to inhabit his mind.
You know, I'm also wondering about Donna Brazile's book. Pete, did you notice, did people come in, did they ask about it, did they buy it, what did they say about it?
Books like that sometimes are quick blips, and that one felt like a quick blip. There was some interest. We sold some copies, but, you know, some books keep selling throughout the whole year or for 2 years or 3 years, and hers seemed more like kind of a quick hit.
You think people were just kind of through by that time? Because it came out just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, no, that's what it felt like, is people had seen the news and they didn't want to read the whole thing, or those that really did got it.
All righty. Let's go to a caller. Once again, 866-798-8255. Whether you have nonfiction or fiction, we're going to move from nonfiction to fiction. So let's go first to Marion in Orinda from Orinda Books. Hi, Marion.
Oh, hi, hi, Renee. It's nice to talk to you, and we have some wonderful fiction suggestions. And at Christmas time, as everyone else has said, we're just so delighted to see people come in with their holiday lists. It's just a pleasure that the community wants to support its local neighborhood bookstore. Mm-hmm. I think one of our favorite fictions, which is so timely, is Gabrielle Zevin, who wrote The Story Life of A.J. Fickrey a few years ago that was set in a bookstore, and people who work in bookstores tend to like those books. But her new one is called Young Jane Young, and it is incredibly timely because Young Jane Young, when she was a young girl in Florida about 15 years ago, she had a sexual relationship with a congressman, and the congressman's career continued. However, Young Jane Young, who was at that time, she was an intern, and at that time, it ruined her life. She had to change her name and move to a different state where she became Jane Young. We followed the arc of her life through the story, but it is just so, it could not be more timely when we talk about people in power abusing those people who are underlings. And
talk
then another
topical,
part.
Yeah.
And does she go on to run for something? Do I remember that right?
Yes. At the very end of the book, we are seeing her running. I think it's for selectman or council in her New England community. She moved from Florida way up north, and so she, Gabrielle Zevin, has kind of a Nora Ephron quality in her narration, though there's a serious subject at the base of this book. It's funny and great reading, great summer reading, holiday reading.
Excellent.
And then another of our favorites is Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. It has a lot of pain in it, I think, because Eleanor, it's the first novel by a Glaswegian, as I believe. It's about a young woman who was severely burned as a child. Her face is disfigured. But it's covered up. It has a little of the Rosie Project quality to it because she has a touch of Asperger in her approach to life. But we're hearing her voice, how people perceive her, how she soldiers on through incredible childhood difficulties, and actually eventually reveals and comes into a stable point in her life. Just very, very classy fiction.
Marion, what was the name of that book again?
It's called Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, and the author is Gail Honeyman.
Got it. Okay.
And then there's another one that I don't know whether anybody has mentioned this earlier, but Sourdough, which has a great San Francisco background. Has someone mentioned that one earlier in the program?
Not yet, but Pete Baldhill is.
I'm smiling and nodding. Smiling and nodding. Yeah, great local author, quirky story. There's the confluence of the food culture and the tech culture.
I know it wraps it all together, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It's funny and funny little spins on Alice Waters and the foodies of the world. So it is. It's been a favorite here and one that we are excited about selling.
Marion, you always have such good suggestions. And isn't that the wonderful thing about indie bookstores? The folks there are always so insightful, and they're able to offer great suggestions. Every time I've ever gone in there, you guys give me four or five really good ones, and it's all about which one to read first.
Well, it's people like you, Renee, that make it happen for us, too. So thank you so much for listening.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about your fiction choices. Pete, what do you think?
Sure. Actually, R.O. and I were talking before the show, and we had some overlaps on our list. One of the books that we both really love is called Her Body and Other Stories by Carmen Machado. Is that right?
Carmen Maria Machado, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a short story collection, and it's a little bit fantastical. It veers a little off of the realistic fiction pattern, but it's very powerful, often funny, and really sharp. What would you add about that book?
It's also a book that, I think that what we read in every book we pick up, that in and of itself is a political act. And for me, it's really important to, especially in the books I review, to think about, can I review a person of color? Can I think about how to shift the attention a little away from reading, reviewing, and publishing in straight white men who have dominated the cultural landscape for so long and still dominate it to such a large extent? And so Carmen's book, I think, is not only an amazing book, but it's so powerful in the ways in which it explores what it is to inhabit a woman's body and the varieties thereof.
Isn't it interesting? I found how often white men write about black women, and you never see the converse. I've never read a single book that was the opposite. Have you?
I have. I feel as though often my writer friends who are women, who are people of color, they often write white men, and we feel as though we've talked about this. My own novel is narrated. One of the narrators is a white man, and our attitude is sort of, well, we live in America, in the patriarchy. We know about the male perspective. We've had to understand the male perspective. We had to understand white people's perspectives to get through, to survive in this country.
So you're not challenged to inhabit that voice?
I think it's far less challenging than it is than what's more common and what gets applauded a lot more is straight white men inhabiting the voices of or trying to take on the voices of more marginalized people. I think the obverse is much more difficult.
Actually, one of my favorites, it's been around since the early 2000s. It's the six-part series of the number one ladies detective agency.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you love those books?
Those are fun.
They're a quick read. It's just so entertaining. It's written by Alexander McCall Smith, and he was born in Zimbabwe, but he currently lives in Scotland. And he writes about Precious Ramotswe. She founded her own ladies detective agency, and she's like the Miss Marple of Botswana. But I always wonder, how do you get into that persona? But I find him very, very convincing. I feel like I know Precious Ramotswe because of him. So, but I've also wondered, too, because I'm attracted to the slave narrative genre. And there are always nuances that I'm amazed that a white male could pick up when you're trying to get into the voice of a female black slave. So it's a challenge.
The best writers, I think, can and should try, to try voices that aren't their own. It's tricky. It can be a sticky business, but, a lot of people read to have experiences that aren't their own, I don't want to read about a middle-aged bookstore white cisgender books owner with 11-year-old twins.
But see, I do. Now, see, that's what I mean. Right. That's what reading is all about, kind of walking a mile or two in someone else's moccasins. Right. I'd love to read a book like that.
Yeah. I was going to mention, too, Sing Unburied Sing by Jesmyn Ward, which is justly won the National Book Award recently. That's selling hand over fist. And I think it's a timely look into the South. And I'm still nuts about Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders. He won the Booker Prize for that this year, and it's a very unusual novel. It's told in a strange way. It takes about 20 pages to kind of even figure out what you're reading, but it's just this beautiful story of President Lincoln going to a cemetery and holding his son, his dead son, one more time. And then this all takes place in this Buddhist realm of in between. And it's heartbreaking and beautiful and also just very, very funny.
Between worlds, so to speak.
Yeah.
And speaking of Jasmine Ward's Sing Unburied Sing, and having a voice of someone unlike herself, she narrates through the, or at least one of her characters, through the voice of an adolescent boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is extraordinary. And there's also the presence of a ghost in the book. And so
that's right.
What you're talking about, there's a lot of that in writing nowadays. Have you noticed that, R.O., that people are using that as a writing technique?
Of using ghosts?
Yes.
Of using, yes, mm-hmm. for sure. We were
Making
actually, Pete and I
too,
were
yeah.
talking about this. I feel as though, I mean, I teach fiction every now and then, and students, the number of stories that come in with zombies and dragons and wizards and shape-shifting evildoers, it's all over the place, and it's really exciting, actually, to see what's happening. I think Pete and I were wondering, I mean, it must have something to do with the after effects of Harry Potter, mm-hmm. of people who've grown up, who've had Harry Potter in their lives, all their lives.
But also, it must be, as a writer, a technique that helps free you up, because a ghost doesn't have any of the constraints of a real person walking around on the earth, right?
I actually think, in some ways, you have to be more careful about making a ghost obey its own rules. Aristotle said something, and I'm paraphrasing, that a convincing impossibility is preferable to an unconvincing possibility. And so if you're going to make a ghost, the ghost better obey its own ghost rules in the world that you've set up for it. And so that can be, in some ways, even harder.
Now, see, I'll bet yours is a really interesting writing class, because I'm going to always remember that. Always remember it. Okay, let's go to another call. Hi, let's see, Judy in San Francisco. Are you still with us?
Yes, I'm going to turn you off. Okay. Speaking of straight white men, I usually love to read fiction, but this period, when we're spinning so hard just to keep up with politics, I'm trying to read, you know, books about the background of today's politics. So that's a lot of straight white men. So I got a lot of these recommendations from your radio show, different guests who've appeared on in your call. One of them is Noam Collins, The Know-It-Alls, about the techies. The tech magnates. another one, I want to read The Devil's Chessboard. I know this is kind of old, but I think it sounds like it's really, really important to see, you know, who really controls what happens in the White House. Not necessarily this White House, though. another one is Democracy in Chains, which is that, I mean, I'm not looking forward to reading these. I read... Dark Money by Jane Mayer, mm-hmm. about the Koch brothers. Democracy and Change, the subtitle is The Deep History of the Radical Right's Stealth Plan for America. And it's about the guy who's behind the Koch brothers, James Buchanan, the economist, and who inspired, and I guess the word, them. And also another one that I learned from your show is The War and Environment Reader by Garth Smith. That sounds really important. And I also have a little unit going about New York. So I'm reading right now Jane Jacobs, The Death and Life of Great American Cities. And I'm going to read The Power Broker about Robert Moses. And I'm also going to read one called In Transit about the transit workers, the transport workers union in New York. That's because I love my quill. You know, I grew up in New York.
All right.
And one fiction is the great Louise Erdős, Future Home of the Living God, that she just wrote. I'm really looking forward to that. A little break.
Excellent.
That was a departure for Louise, too. That's another novel that brings where she veered away a little bit farther away from realistic fiction and into the speculative or imaginative fiction.
For sure.
We're going to take a quick break. We know that you've got your favorites out there, and we invite you to share them with us. This is our favorite show of the year. 866-798-8255 is the number. And we're coming right back with R.O. Kwan and Pete Mulvihill to talk about your favorite books of the year. We're going to take a quick break and come right back. Welcome back. For those of you just joining us now, I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting the show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org, and there you can also listen to past shows and find out about what's coming up next. And we love it when you have show ideas for us. You can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org, or give us a call, 866-798-8255. Coming up tomorrow on Friday, we'll have the Your Call Media Roundtable. Lots to talk about, developments with the moving of the U.S. Embassy in Israel. So lots to talk about there. Today, we are covering one of my favorite subjects, books. So what have been your favorite reads this year? What books are you gushing about? Which ones do you plan to put on your gift list or your wish list? We're joined by Pete Mulvihill, co-owner of Green Apple Books, and also by R.O. Kwan, whose new novel, The Incendiaries, is coming out in July. So you have it's an interesting list that you have of your own, R.O. 34 books. Let's talk about them. 34 books by women of color to read this year.
Well, what happened was that as I finished my book and as I had sort of a lull, I really wanted to review more books. And so I was looking around for books that I could find, books that might be interesting in the upcoming year. And at some point I realized that the book was mostly men, and I thought, oh, no, definitely not. so I tried to correct for that. I was able to find a lot more books by men of color and by white women, but women of color were really difficult for me. And I was trawling through publishers' catalogs. I was emailing my friends. And at some point I realized, you know, if this is this hard for me, and I care, I desperately care, this is a priority for me, then it's going to be hard for everybody, especially people who aren't thinking about this. Mm-hmm. And so I made the list. And it turns out Electric Literature told me that it's one of the most shared pieces they've ever had in their history of running pieces. And so that makes me so happy. Not for myself, but for these books and for whatever change it might have made in terms of what other people are reading, what they're looking for.
And you actually have a subtitle, Searching for Unicorns in Publishers' Catalogs. Was it that really that rare?
It was it's so easy to skew toward reading straight white men. Even today, even with Jesmyne Ward winning the National Book Award, even with all of that, just 2 weeks ago, I think, by the books, the New York Times Weekly book recommendation section, which a lot of people read, obviously, it's they bring on very prominent writers to recommend books. And the wonderful writer Lauren Groff pointed out on Twitter that 4 out of the 43 books that someone had recommended, 4 of them were by women. So he'd recommended 39 books by men. I mean, he should be ashamed of himself. But that's so easy to do, I think, if you're not thinking about it, because books by white men are what get covered. Books by white men are still what get published. And so to the extent that I can, I want to use my voice to try to change that.
Well, if you want to talk rare as unicorns and rare as hen's teeth, how about science fiction made for black people by black people? The online source The Root came up with that compilation. It's literally called A Guide to Fantasy and Science Fiction Made for Black People by Black People. So a couple of their suggestions are Redemption in Indigo by Barbadian author Karen Lord. It's described as a hilarious tale of a woman who leaves her gluttonous husband and shortly after is presented with a chaos stick that allows her to manipulate forces in the world. It's based on a Senegalese folktale. That one's interesting sounding. And Dark Matter, also. It includes writing from trailblazers such as Du Bois, Octavia Butler, Charles Saunders, and it's a comprehensive anthology of fantasy, horror, and science fiction penned by black authors. So those both sound pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go to the phones and see what Denny in Richmond has to suggest. Hi, Denny. Thanks for holding on.
Yeah. Hi, Renee. Thanks for your show. I sent a couple of suggestions by email to you for children's books with a sort of an activist tilt. These are books written by a local artist and author, Eno Nagara, with the collective over there in the East Bay, and what the first one is an alphabetical book called A is for Activists. So it's written and illustrated by Eno to bring forth activism ideas to kids. So So it's a really well done book. It's won a number of awards, and I think your readers who are looking for kids' books that are a little bit serious but still fun would like that. Sure. And then he has a new book out called Counting on Community. That's available too through the Seven Stories project. So yeah, I hope you guys will put that up on your website and encourage your everybody to buy some books for your kids that are going to help us deal with what we're dealing with now, which is we got to be more and more activists, right?
Is it ever too early? Thank you so much, Danny. We like the idea of that. Yes?
Yeah, there's another book called Rad American Women, A to Z, that's also a very colorful, light, lively gift book for kids, written by and illustrated by local authors and illustrators. So we have a fair amount of activist books in the kids section right now.
Well, you know what? As an auntie and a godmother, I don't do the robo, I don't do that. Auntie gives books, right? So I'm looking forward to your suggestions, Pete. What's on your list of kids' books for this year?
Well, Rad American Women was on my list for mm-hmm. sure. It's a couple years old, but it's wonderful. They also have done one that's international, so that's another option. There's a writer named Matt De La Pena, mm-hmm. And he focuses actually on story first, illustration second, but third he focuses on what's called incidental diversity. So the identity of the character sort of has nothing to do with the story. You know, it's a kid. I think last book I saw was called The Last Stop on Market Street. I believe he has a new one out too. So the young boy in his book is African American, but that's not an issue in the book. And there's more and more children's books that are having diverse characters without having to talk about why there's a diverse character in this book.
We've actually had the authors of Rad American Women on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
Mm-hmm.
There's great books for middle grade readers that are sort of ever perennial. There's a Rick Riordan. I have an 11-year-old son who loves the Rick Riordan. They're based on mythology. He loves those. The Diary of a Wimpy Kid, which is kind of a great gateway series for the 8, 9-year-old set. Daniel Handler and Lisa Brown, a husband-wife team. He's behind Lemony Snicket. Mm-hmm. Have a great book called Goldfish Ghost. That's really fun. We have at both stores we have kids' book specialists who really know. You know, you can walk in and say, "I have a nephew in Philadelphia, and he loves football, and I hate football, and I don't know what to do." Mm-hmm. And they'll put the right book in your hand. It's not my sweet spot anymore now that my kids have hit the middle grade. But it's a huge sales area in the store. Kids, I love hearing kids beg their parents for books, of course. it's really a fun. It's so easy to evaluate a kid's book quickly. You know, you can generally kind of flip through it and just see how it looks and feels. But it doesn't always mean it's great. But it's a really fun area to shop in because you can expose yourself to just dozens and dozens of interesting books in a short period of time.
And it's never too early to start reading. You know, I've seen the PSAs on TV now that say, you know, start reading to your child, even if they're just an infant in arms. It's
never really
too early.
There's some correlation between how many words a child is exposed to in the first 2 years of life and their all these, you know, sociological statistics later in life. So literally hearing more words as a child will lead you to a safer, more successful life.
And spoken words, not TV words.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
I've also read that having more books in the house, just having them around, creates a child who reads a lot more. And so I think the message from that is buy a lot more books and keep
Amen.
Them around the house from your local bookstores.
I was a library kid, strangely. I didn't know you could buy books until I was 20. We went to the library twice a week. And obviously my livelihood relies on people buying books, but I don't care if they get them from the library or get them from a friend, you know?
You know, one of the favorite places I have is the Temescal branch of the Oakland Library. It's a beautiful old building and the coffered ceilings and the smell of rubbed oil in the wood and the hand-laid tile, and it's just gorgeous, and it smells like books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful that we still have libraries and that we are not all doing Kindles or, you know, bookstores. I'm mm-hmm. actually grateful to have bookstores like yours, of course, Green Apple, but I love a good library, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and the Bay Area has 50, 60, 70 locally owned independent bookstores. So really almost every community should be able to get to their local store. And the local stores really reflect what the community wants. You know, we put books out there and they don't sell, we get rid of them. We put out the books that we think our community wants, and then we adapt. So really the shelves reflect the values of the community.
Interesting. Arlo, did you have a children's book you wanted to suggest?
I do. I don't read it much children's literature in general, but there is a sort of, for older children, I think a great book would be a graphic novel called The Best We Can Do by Thi Bui, and it's about Vietnamese refugees. And Viet Nguyen, the Pulitzer Prize winner and wonderful writer, had recommended the book, and it's an amazing book. It's so powerful, and of course, kids love graphic novels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my daughter's sweet spot. She's 11 too, and she loves the graphic novels. There's Raina Telgemeier is a local author and illustrator who has done some great books. Jean Luen Yang wrote a book called American Born Chinese, and it was the very first graphic novel to win the National Book Award for Fiction, I believe, a few years ago. So, yeah, there's in the graphic area, there's been a huge explosion in graphic novels for kids that are, you know, it's not that, you know, superhero stuff. It's different and super smart and culturally sensitive and really engaging for kids that might be reluctant readers.
There's a group called the American Indians and Children's Literature Group. It was founded in 2006, the AICL, and they have out their list of favorites for 2017. For comics and graphic novels, they're recommending Hope Nicholson's Moonshot, the Indigenous Comics Collection. And picture books-wise, one of their favorites is A Day with Yaya, and it's illustrated by Julie Flett. And for middle grades, Tim Tingle, and it's about the Choctaw Bigfoot Midnight in the Mountains. And for high school, finally, Lisa and Mary Beth Leatherdale have a book that they recommend called Charlie Boy. So those are some of the suggestions there. And the New York Times, before we move off of kids' books, they have their list of the notable children's books of 2017. So the New York Times is suggesting After the Fall, How Humpty Dumpty Got Back Up Again. We're going to assume that that's for the little ones, written and illustrated by Dan Santat, as well as Goodnight Planet, written and illustrated by Lanier's. It's about a little girl who drifts off to sleep and her stuffed rabbit heads out for a night of adventure. And, you know, hilarity ensues. So those are two of the New York Times suggestions. All right, let's take another call. Susan in Richmond, thanks for holding.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a retired teacher from what used to be the Richmond Unified School District. It's now West Contra Costa. There is a pop-up bookstore open until December 29th at Hilltop Mall. It's upstairs on the second floor by Macy's, and it is a nonprofit. It's being run by West County Reads, which is a reading program that brings reading into the public schools in our district. And it's all multicultural books, a lot of paperbacks, a lot of things that are very affordable that I have in my classroom. And I would recommend people to check it out. Hilltop Mall, second floor by the Macy's, pop-up bookstore, nonprofit.
What an idea, a pop-up bookstore.
Yeah, and sometimes stores, before they take the leap and sign a 10-year lease and buy $250,000 worth of books, and will try out a location and bring in a selection. And I especially like such a focus selection. That sounds like it's going to fit the community's needs really well.
And while we're on the subject of children's books, we have an email from Stephen in Oakland, and he says, this year I found a new book perfect for 8 to 12-year-olds. It's called Mosby's Magic Carpet Handbook, and it's by a local author named Ilona Bray. It's a faux manual for customers of a magic carpet factory, great for fantasy-loving kids. And it also sneaks in lots of factual information about things like flight principles, like G-forces and altitudes, survival and weird food. So that's an excellent suggestion.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, whenever you can sneak a little information in there on them, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
The Guardian actually published an article. It's called Open the Doors and Let These Books In. And the question that it poses is, what would a truly diverse reading list look like? So the authors that they featured were Camilla Shamsi, Hanif Qureshi, Arundhati Roy, Toni Morrison. And so the idea, too, I think, is to make sure that kids be begin to see themselves in some of the books as they start reading. R.O., how important do you think that is?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll say first, I love that Shamsi book. It's a fantastic book. But for me, I grew up, part of why this is so important for me is that I grew up, I mean, I love to read, but all throughout my childhood, as I've said, I grew up reading all Henry James, Edith Wharton, Tolstoy. That was my jam. And then I went to college and I still wrote, that was still mostly what I was reading. I read a little Toni Morrison, you know, just like a little here and there. But in college, I took writing classes all through college. I wrote characters who had no race. They would every now and then have vaguely black hair. And at some point, a friend who's also a fantastic writer, Karan Mahajan, said, "Reese, I'm going to ask you a question somebody once asked me. Why are you only writing white people?" And I realized I hadn't been thinking about it. I hadn't been thinking about my characters. I hadn't been thinking about race as anything to bring up in fiction because it's not brought up in Henry James. It's not brought up in Edith Wharton. And so not seeing yourself exist in the art form that you love, in which you intend to spend your life, it's heartbreaking when you realize that that's been going on. And I think the landscape is changing, and I think that's tremendously exciting. And I'm so happy for kids now I don't think it's the same.
And timing wise, I imagine, Pete, you can't imagine a better time to just take a stroll in somebody else's moccasins just for a minute. That's why Hillbilly Elegy is one that I plan to pick up. I haven't done it yet, but I can't wait to see what that perspective is. It seems like a really good recipe for times like these.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, the joy of browsing independent bookstores is you're going to stumble on something you didn't know you want. You know, Amazon is great for search. They're terrible for browse. You know, you don't just kind of go on Amazon and poke around and discover something that you didn't know existed. You might go up to Hillbilly Elegy and then see the book next to it and go, "Oh, I should read this too." Mm-hmm. So that's really this time of year is great. We just love to see people wandering and getting lost in the shelves and discovering things.
And you can't do that with a Kindle.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We also there's a bunch of big gift books this year that are very beautiful physically, and you know, you can't replicate that on e-ink. There's one of our biggest sellers right now is this beautiful photography book on the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. It's 8 years of you know, up close and intimate photography on Obama, and we're going to run out. Every bookstore in the Bay Area is going to run out. It's just one of those books that is you know, printed far away, and they made a print run, and they've told us, you know, the next print run's due in the middle of January. So we scrounged together as many copies as we could, but there's been a lot of demand for that one already. So it's a great gift book. There's a beautiful book of photographs called SF Noir, San Francisco Noir, and they're beautiful old black and white photographs of the city and done by a local photographer who's, I think, 89 years old. He came in and signed ours, which is great. Andy Leibowitz has a photography book out of portraits, mostly of women. It's very beautiful. And I got my wife. I hope she's not listening. Maybe I shouldn't say it.
Okay, time to cover your ears.
Yeah, better not. A little book on urban. She and I like to do what we call urban hikes. Instead of driving, you know, an hour or two to get to the greenery, we just kind of explore the city on foot. So there's a book called Urban Trails of San Francisco that's going to be in her stocking.
And you know what? I always find that bookstores are a great place. You said that you had a signed copy. That's where authors actually come and sign books. And so do you have any authors coming to visit that you know of in the short term?
Yeah, we kind of slow down. In fact, I look at RO's list this morning, and there are about a third of the women that she listed have come through Green Apple Books in the Park and done an event with us this year. So we do have a lot of signed books from those authors. We don't do a lot of in-store events in December because it gets so busy. We do have the owners of the State Bird Provisions restaurant coming in. They have a new cookbook out, and we're going to do a little happy hour with drinks and snacks with them next week. But we do have a ton of signed copies. George Saunders dropped by last weekend and signed copies of Lincoln in the Barter for us. We have Armistead Maupin's book signed. We have Hunger by Roxane Gay, which is a book I read this year that completely opened my mind
What's
in wonderful ways. It's about it's a memoir of her body. She's obese, it's her story of her struggle with weight. I don't want to give much away, but you know, it's very powerful. It's very powerful. Did you read that?
Yeah, well, it's an account of having been gang raped at the age of 12 And so in her ostracized and ashamed, she took to eating, hoping that if she made herself big, quote, that if I made myself big, my body would be safe. It's an incredible book. And everything, Roxane Gay's writing in general, I think, is essential writing for our times. People who want to understand how we are where we are, I think Roxane has a lot to say about that.
You know, I also, one of my new favorites is by Gabourey Sidibe, the actor. And hers is called It's Just My Face, Try Not to Stare. And it's really well written. I didn't really expect it, and I was so pleasantly surprised. But it's about a life spent as a woman who's brown and round. And it's just really a good read. It's Just My Face, Try Not to Stare.
There's another similar book that's a collection of humorous essays. I can't remember for the life of me who wrote it, but it's called No, You Can't Touch My Hair.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
I've heard of that one. We can Google it.
There you go.
All right, let's go to Harvey, who's been waiting. Thanks for being with us. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, it's actually Harry in San Francisco.
Oh, sorry.
No problem. I wanted to recommend, first of all, people in San Francisco read the book How to Kill a City by Peter Moskowitz, which is really an excellent book, and the chapter on San Francisco is called The Gentrified City, very appropriately. The best novel I've read this year is The Explosion Chronicle by Yan Lianke, and all of his books are really excellent. And also Reputations by a Colombian novelist, Juan Gabriel Vasquez, which is not magical realism, but The Explosion Chronicles, interestingly enough, is. It's really amazing what he does with prose in that book. There's also a book called that came out last year, self-published, called I Hate the Internet by Jason Kobeck. It's a satire of contemporary San Francisco. And I wanted to also recommend John Farrell's biography of Richard Nixon, which is a really good education for people, whether they were alive at that time or not, as to actually what went on behind the scenes, because most of that has only come to light recently. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. And crack producer Laura Flynn says that it's Phoebe Robinson who wrote You
Thanks.
Can't Touch My Hair and other things I still have to explain. Now that one I'm going to pick up. I've heard of it. And she's also co-host of a podcast called Two Dope Queens. Apparently it's really funny.
My wife listens to that. I haven't heard it yet, but she listens and laughs a lot.
Must do. All right. So any reading list additions that you haven't gotten to yet, Aro?
Well, a book I recommend over and over again is Goodbye Vitamin by Rachel Kong.
Yeah.
She's a local writer. She lives in San Francisco, and it's about a woman whose father has Alzheimer's disease. She goes home to take care of him. This sounds perhaps like a very gloomy premise, but it's one of the warmest, most alive books I've read in recent memory. It's truly difficult, too, in fiction to depict goodness or the attempt to try to be a better person. Evil is so much more interesting in an obvious way. And Rachel Kong does this beautifully in ways that had me wanting myself to try to be a better person. I just kept calling my grandmother as I was reading it.
You know, you hear that about actors, too, that they say it's a lot easier to play an evil character than a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard a writer say it's a lot easier to write from the evil mean side than from the I'm really striving to be a better person side.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
I think evil, I mean, look at the movies that get made, for instance. When things are blowing up, evil makes things happen. When things are blowing up, the Joker is such a compelling character because he just wants to burn things down. Goodness consists of, or the attempt to be a person, better person, consists of things like being nice to someone at the store, calling your relatives, these are less quickly easy to depict, I think, than burning down entire buildings.
Yeah, a lot of fiction relies on conflict, right?
Exactly.
So
evil makes things happen.
Right, it's and, a great way to put it.
Well, those of us burning the midnight oil, including my neighbor and the person I ran into at the Safeway store, you know, everybody wants to kind of try writing. So once again, if you had one little trick, how do you get from reader to writer?
I would say read even more would be my advice. Mm-hmm. Every serious writer I know is a desperately serious reader. It's one of the most, it's every time I see a writer friend when we get a drink, one of the most serious questions of the evening is, what have you been reading lately that you're excited about? Mm-hmm. And so the more you're reading, the more likely you are to be able to write in a way that you're going to be able to find to be bearably satisfying.
And you know what? Alice Walker has said the same thing. I interviewed her once, and she said, if you want to be a writer, you got to be a reader. Mm-hmm. And the more you read, the better the writing.
Mm-hmm. It's the food. Without it, there's no writing.
Mm. And Aro told me another secret, which is that you spent how many years working on your first novel?
I spent 10 years working on my first
so
novel.
Just give it a
wow.
So I'm always never sure why people want so much to be writers.
It's not easy.
I've heard it's lonely and difficult, but worth the effort.
My writer friends tend to be a relatively melancholic bunch, I'd say. Pete could probably speak to that.
The bookstore employees, too. Yeah.
Well, we're going to wind up here, but I want you to give your final plug. Tell us when Incendiaries is coming out. R.O.?
It's coming out in July, at the end of July, July 31st. And, I should be having events in the area, I imagine.
Excellent. Probably at what? Green Apple
Books?
We would
love to host it. We'd love to have your launch party.
It has been such a pleasure. This is my favorite show. We are just so proud to have had you here, Pete Mulvihill, holding it down at Green Apple Books.
Thanks, Renee.
50 years?
50 years.
And counting.
Yep.
We love it. And R.O. Kwan, we're looking forward to The Incendiaries coming out in July.
Thank you.
We're going to leave it there. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in and for your email. Sorry we couldn't get to all of you. Coming up tomorrow, it's the Media Roundtable. Join us. Your call is produced at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Lauren Schechter is our social media producer. Phil Hartman is chief engineer. Kevin Vance is the studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Renee Kemp. This is Your Call.